Welcome this morning to Minnesota Reads. It's not often that we have an author as a guest that we've already talked about on our program in a different context. Andy Sturdivant is our guest this morning. Potluck Supper with Meeting to Follow is the name of his collection of essays. And he was in town last night to be at the Duluth Art Institute's member meeting. And in honor of his book, they had everybody bring a dish to pass. So you had like the hot dish experience last night.
Yeah, I mean it was literally a potluck supper with a meeting afterwards. It was the very the very thing that the title suggests.
I love it. All right. So without mentioning anybody by name, and chances are you wouldn't remember the names anyway, what was your favorite hot dish?
Well, this is pretty easy. Annie Dugan makes a really top-notch lasagna-based dish.
Wow.
Yeah, very, very exciting. Perfect balance of flavors, all those things that you want.
Well, of course, they've got the food farm out in Rangel.
Exactly.
So was it a veggie lasagna?
It was a veggie lasagna, yes. Lots of great vegetables in there.
Okay.
Yeah, it was very top notch.
I've discovered with vegetable lasagna that if you put enough tomato sauce on something, I'll eat it.
Yeah,
I don't know any better.
Yeah, it doesn't take much tomato sauce
to make
a great dish.
To make something palatable.
And the presentation was excellent, too, as you might expect, of course. It was kind of a square shape, just the perfect application of cheese and sauce. I mean, it was almost like a Rothko, like a Rothko painting with the tomato sauce just bleeding ever so gradiated into the cheese. And it was a very intense experience.
Do you think she curated the dinner?
I do. I absolutely think. I think that curation goes into everything that she does.
Wow. I'm kind of impressed by that, actually. All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming in, Andy. It's been great. We need more conversations about food on this show. All right. So your book is a collection of essays.
It is.
And that's interesting to me because I always am fascinated by artists who cross disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are your illustrations, right?
They are, yeah.
Somebody else did the photographs, but
right.
These are your illustrations.
Yeah, Carrie Thompson did the photographs.
So what do I find upon opening this book? But my beloved Ralph.
Is that your beloved Ralph? Oh, perfect.
In Moorhead, Minnesota.
Yeah.
I went to college in Moorhead.
Okay.
In the early 80s.
Uh-huh. Prime time.
And Ralph's was one of the theater bars.
Uh-huh.
And so, well, and of course, this is, this has more to do with Minnesota, so you would have missed, you missed the Pink Pussycat in Fargo.
I did, unfortunately.
Had you ever heard, did anybody talk to you about that? That was another, you kind of refer to these as old man bars.
Right.
Ralph's was traditionally a theater bar.
Okay. That's where the rock and roll people hung out, too.
For Moorhead State's theater department.
Yeah, for the theater department.
Which is a powerhouse. It was a powerhouse.
Yeah.
It was a summer theater troupe, which meant that there were actors and theater people in Ralph's
all the time. Yeah.
Pink Pussycat downtown Fargo on NP Avenue. And it had a great neon sign, as you might imagine.
Right, of course.
One of the interesting things that you talk about in this book, and the contents are so eclectic, it's really very difficult to sum up what it's about, is you not only talk about things that are, but in this particular instance, things that aren't.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the way that people talk about institutions that had existed at one time and then ceased to exist is really interesting. I mean, I think that people do that, everywhere. But I think particularly when I came to the Midwest, just the idea of these ghosts on the landscape, these kind of ghostly presences that were still part of people's lives. People would still talk about like Ralph's or still talk about the Pink Pussycat or some of these other places in a way that seemed very, very present, very presently situated. And I just found that, I found that so interesting and kind of touching and fun to think about.
Did you have the opportunity, because I know that in many rural communities, conversations are held around, they moved into the Anderson place.
Yeah, sure.
And the Andersons maybe haven't lived there for 50 years, but they moved into the old Anderson place. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So is that something kind of unique to us here, did you find? Or
I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of those things that you find in a lot of places. And I didn't get into the rural communities as much, but I think definitely it's been interesting in Minneapolis hearing about the Macy's closing. Macy's downtown.
Wow. And but who calls Christmas, it? And the Christmas thing and the windows at Christmas and the shows.
But who calls it Macy's? You know, people still like refer to it as Dayton's or in the same way that the Anderson place, you know, Macy's moved into the old Dayton's place, but it's still the Dayton's. And it's kind of funny to think that probably for decades to come, you know, whatever goes in there, whatever apartments or, you know, condos or, you know, whatever gets into that building, people will still probably refer to it as Dayton's.
Right.
Just that kind of long-term sense of memory, I think, was...
And yet you also point out that our idea of long-term is maybe, you know, 40, 50 years. And when you travel, you discover that, I mean, we're just a blip.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't go to a park or a reservation...
Right.
You don't find anything that's older than, you know, 150 years.
Exactly. And it's that time frame gets stretched out in a really interesting way. Like, you know, I'd hear people talking about, you know, like galleries in Minneapolis in the 1980s. And you know, it's not that long ago, but the way they were talking, you know, it almost sounded like they were talking about like something that was happening in a Jacques-Louis David painting.
I was thinking about a place. My daughter's going to be going to college in Fargo-Moorhead in the fall, and I was thinking about Block 6, and oh, that was so wonderful. Well, of course, that's been gone, you know, from Fargo for, you know, maybe 30 years. Uh-huh. But I don't know. When things get erased in this day and age, generally they get really erased.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there isn't necessarily Macy's, for example. No, mm-hmm. It's not likely that anybody's going to, you know, blow up Macy's and wipe it off the map and build something new there. But a lot of things, it's just, it's cheaper, easier to tear it down and start over again.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, I don't know, I wrote a lot of these essays when I was in my late 20s, early 30s. And I think that's, not that I'm that much older than that now.
We talked about this aging thing.
I did. But I don't know. I think particularly, you know, because this book is a couple years old, I can definitely see where that is, for me anyway, and I think for a lot of people, that's the age where you have some longevity and you start thinking about the way that time works and the way that memory works. And I think a lot of what I was writing about and still write about is really, you know, really comes out of that idea of...
I'm fascinated, again, with artists that cross disciplines, and I wonder, what is it that you can't paint? So you have to write about, or draw, so you have to write about. And what is it that you can't write about, so you have to draw?
Yeah, and I don't know that it's necessarily an either-or thing. Like, it came out of a pretty straightforward fine arts background. You know, I have a BFA in painting. And writing was something I always did kind of on the side. And over the years, you know, those two things have kind of ebbed and flowed. Sometimes there's been more opportunities to write things than make artwork about them. Sometimes there's been more opportunities to make artwork about things than write about them. But they seem very closely related. You know, I mean, they seem like different tools in the same toolkit. You know, I mean, I don't think there's anything out there that I would just write about that I wouldn't have some sort of visual ideas about. It wouldn't incorporate some kind of art making into that, which is why, you know, in this book, it was great to do the illustrations too, to have, you know, about 100 illustrations or so that complemented the text in a way that, you know, hopefully adds something to it. But also, you know, it gives me the opportunity to use any tool that I can to tell the story.
When that little light bulb goes off over your head, something that you see, something you think, something that you, you know, in particular observe.
Yeah.
Is your first thought, do you begin to mentally write about it, or is your first thought to draw it?
You know, it does start from a writing perspective, probably. I've never been great with observational drawing. I've never been somebody that has had a sketchbook with me all the time, which is too bad. I really admire people that do. But I think the impetus initially is to start with the words. And I think even a lot of the art projects I talked about last night at the Art Institute, those were things that had maybe started with a more, you know, writing-based sort of narrative ideas. And then the visual parts came out of that. I mean, it always starts, research is actually where it begins. You know, I'll see something and the initial question will be, oh my God, where did that come from? Like, how do I find out, you know, turn around and go to the library, the archive and try to look it up and take it from there.
Maybe you just need a better, like, little portable computer, because then you can do your Google search on whatever, and then you can just take your finger and just draw, you know, just something magical right then and there.
Well, as it happens, we all have little computers in our pockets now.
Well, so. We kind of do, but the screens are. As you get older, Andy, your eyes are going to be crap, and you're going to wish that you had a bigger screen. I'm just telling you. Andy, thank you so much for coming into our studio this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you so
much. What fun to have you here. Write something else soon so we can have you back on the show, would you please?
Done and done.
Thank you. Oh, I just love it when artists are amenable to suggestions. Andy Sturdivant, our guest this morning, he's written a collection of essays called Potluck Supper with Meeting to Follow. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.